Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-host, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson, and community organizing socialist Kenny Cepeda. We are online at what-s-left.webno.com. Please subscribe, rate, review, and share your favorite episode wherever you found this episode. Turn on your notifications. Thank you. Today, we have what I hope may be a short episode. It's always my hope we have a 20-minute episode.
We have not done it yet.
We haven't. It's still my goal. Today we will be discussing predictions, hopes, visions, as Andy maybe suggested in an offline conversation that we had over text message, where you thought maybe we could discuss the visions of what we can do with what's left. That might be an interesting conversation to have online. And what do we make of what is happening today? Because it's the Day of Kings. No, I'm kidding. That's not good. Because of the recent elections in Georgia, as well as the protests, mostly Trump supporters out in Washington, D.C., storming the Capitol, and apparently, one woman has died. Mm-hmm. So we'll be discussing that. And of course, yes, happy days. Feliz Día de Reyes, of course, because that is part of today. Right. What do you all know? What's your radar? What are you listening to or sharing or wondering from today? So I
usually don't watch the news. Obviously, I think that, you know, they all have an angle and it's a bunch of disinformation from either side. But today my brother was around and he turned the TV on and, you know, there was people in, the Capitol, right? Storming Congress. It was reporting, and so I got caught up on that, and then started surfing through all the channels, and I stayed glued for 4 hours or so through it. So, you know, reports of people, Trump supporters, invaded Congress, and so I watched the different media outlets and how they were covering it. And I also watched the debates on, once they resumed, because they had to pause, right? Like they were supposed to certify the electoral college votes today. And that process got delayed because of this, what some people are calling attempted coup. That's what I know happened today. Also Georgia, right? Like there was elections to decide the winners of the runoffs for Senate positions, right? That would determine the balance of power between Democrats and Republicans. What I know is that now it's going to be 50-50, right? And so the tiebreaker will be the incoming vice president, who is the president of the Senate. And so in this case will be Kamala Harris, if and when they get certified, which is happening tonight.
And what do you make of it, Ken?
Diving right into it. I was thinking, it reminded me of a reality TV show. And I think it's very fitting, very appropriate that, you know, I do think everyone turned on Trump. You know, like I also thought of Machiavelli. You know, when you have to sacrifice the piece you do and you throw him under the bus. You know, even Lindsey Graham, you know, like came publicly and said, enough is enough. I saw the whole thing developing on TV. Yes, there was, you know, people there. I don't think it's what is being reported. I don't think it's as intense as being reported. I've seen some images. By and large, I don't think there was a lot of violence. And also there's images of people like just kind of walking through the gates, you know, and the claim from the left is that these are cops, white cops letting white people in. you know, just letting them walk in. But overall, for me, the feeling is it feels staged. It feels, you know, too deliberate, and it provides the political class a way to get rid of Trump, move on, you know, to put at rest this whole, you know, electoral challenges things, gave the perfect excuse to Republicans to say, you know, we're splitting from Trump. And so, I mean, there's different angles from both sides. I think they're both gain. But overall, I would say it feels, I question it. Even the amount of police presence that was there, you know, the camera angles, you know, there come the police heroically coming to defend Congress, really, like, you know, it's supposed to be one of the most protected places in this nation, right? And they were able to walk into Pelosi's office and take some stuff. And but now everyone's united in, you know, in the American nationalist sentiment, you know, in making allusions to the history and the continuity of this government as if it ever was very inclusive and, you know, democratic. So that's the net result, you know, the political class claiming American patriotism. And I guess one more thing would be that I also see like resemblance of the Democrats or the new, this coming governing class, or doing a warning shot to protesters, you know, that will be happening as a result of these economic things, you know, law and order. It almost felt like Nixon was speaking when like Biden and other Democrats were speaking. You know, even recently, before this, even Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was claiming that law and order. You know, and so there, it's a warning shot to protesters on the left and on the right, mainly on the left, I think.
So I have stated before that in this show that I don't see the Democrats as, or even some Republicans, I don't see them as complete enemies. I will work with whoever I need to work with to advance progressive causes. I don't want to stay stuck somewhere and don't want to put all of my eggs in my basket, as I know it's customary for people to do when they start supporting Democrats, and stay stuck with them, stay stuck with the party, hoping that they could be their savior. But I do ally myself with them if I need to. And there are some things that I will align myself with the Democrats. And if that means that two Democrats have to win in the runoff election, well, that is more to some of the causes I will support. I know that I saw an interview with Ossoff, one of the Democrat challengers to the incumbent Perdue, and he isn't a progressive, even though he is a Democrat. And he said he's not for the Green New Deal. He is not for abolishing ICE. And he said he is not for defunding the police. And he is not. And those aren't necessarily, as I would consider, radical causes. But abolishing ICE is one of those that I would staunchly support if it was coming from a conservative or a left-leaning political party, but it's not even the Democrats who are going to support that. So I have mixed feelings about the election results. As far as this rioters that are going, the way I see it is it's anytime conservatives say that protesters have been out on the streets after George Floyd and other Breonna Taylor and Jake Blake, I think it was, or I forget the name. Now, we have had so many African-Americans, unfortunately, our brothers and sisters destroyed under this system, that to keep up is challenging. But that's why I think that's why they say you should say their name. Anyhow, those protesters are often labeled as violent rioters. And this is a clear sign that folks on the right are also just as violent, or also violent. Rioting. I haven't seen any on the left take over the Capitol. So I don't know if I can go ahead and count them as the same. I'm just saying that it is something I argue with my friend Jake, where he constantly tries to tell me that the left is a bunch of looters and anarchists, violent anti-fascists. And you look at what's going on here, and I don't know where he thinks that the right is innocent with white paws, you know, clean. So I think of it that in this way. But it is interesting what Kenny pointed out when he said that Lindsey Graham came out and say that enough is enough. And I suspect that he saw that the elections have now favored the Democrats and now is going to align himself with President-elect Joe Biden. And so you see now the reshuffling of the way that things are going to work in Congress, because it is in order to maintain. If you're not going to win them, you might as well befriend them. And if the Democrats are in power, you don't want the Democrats to go too socialist or too as their version of socialist. And so they're going to align themselves with the capitalists like the Democrats. And I see that. That's just another part of their game. Yeah, that's just my initial thoughts. I don't have a lot of thoughts except whoever died, it's not fair. I don't think people should be dying. There will be death anytime there will be any sort of clash between the state and people on the ground and wherever they come from. But it is a divisive moment, no?
Well, I do think this is one of the frames, because there's a racial frame to this, and some people who have thought that the response that the cops have had is situated around, say, the fact that the police union supported Trump, and so the cops are being easy on the demonstrators and stuff like that. I've seen two things. I have seen fights that occurred between the protesters and the cops, and I've seen cops like literally open gates and let people come towards the thing. And then the number of people who are inside the Congress building or the Capitol were like, there's so few cops there. Protesters were just wandering around. This to me looks like theater. And the question is theater for what? I guess I'll say this first. The most dangerous, violent group in all of this is not the George Floyd protesters or the people who are outside of the Capitol there. The most dangerous, violent group are the people inside the Capitol, like the actual ones getting elected today or doing the electing. They are the ones who've got their hands drenched in blood. Dick Cheney and a bunch of other defense people who are essentially war criminals came out last week and said, oh, we want to support Biden. We're against Trump. Now, Trump is in on the whole thing. Like, I mean, in terms of, he's a very convenient person to hang all this stuff on, just like coronavirus is very convenient to hang a lot of things on. But I think there's been a lot of this is to essentially marshal everyone behind the state, behind defending the state, behind defending our democracy. A democracy which itself is a sham at this moment, because these are electoral college votes. These are all indirect votes. These are people of power putting another person in power. That's not democracy. Now that's only the barest form of the critique of our democracy I would make, because obviously with money in it, obviously when you just look at people live as under a tyranny at their own jobs, you don't really have anything that's like democracy in terms of, I think you can't have democracy unless you have workers' power and socialism. And workers have to take control of this country for themselves for us to have democracy. Otherwise, we will live as we have lived under capitalist dictatorship, bourgeois dictatorship. And we're seeing an aspect of that. So what's happened today, I think, is going to be used to tighten the screws. Is to get everyone behind the establishment, and for the establishment to tighten the screws on us all. Twitter shut down Trump's tweets for the next 12 hours. I mean, that's like, we're going to see so much censorship that's just like, yeah, you're gone, you're gone. New York Post, your articles are down. Your tweets are gone, Trump. If that happens to people who are within the ruling sections of the ruling class, what do you think they're going to do to workers? And whether it's the left or the right, and it will be mostly a tool to on anything independent on the left and anything independent on the right. And I would not describe these demonstrations as independent. The ones that are taking place, they are largely for Trump supporters. And if they got what they wanted, they would still be getting screwed. But they are useful at this point. And they've been essentially allowed to come in and put on this whole big show so that everyone, all the people inside can act like they're the ones preserving our democracy when they're the ones who are actually dismantling it. Or they're just going to take even more and more of our freedoms away. And that's what's coming. In fact, Whitney Webb wrote, this is what Whitney Webb had written about when she talked about the election chaos and how the election chaos was going to be used to justify ever more restrictive laws on the part of the state. So I can see we're going to have gun control things. We're going to have increased surveillance. They're going to talk about monitoring the right, but it's going to be about monitoring the left and the right. To me, this is very scary, but not because of people storming the Congress. I would say the left should have stormed Congress a long time ago. We should have done this a long time ago. When they went in after Iraq, this should have been done. When they were doing this in Vietnam, they should have been done. When they were threatening immigrants in 2006, this should have been done. Like, we should have taken these people out of Congress physically a long time ago. This, a few hundred people are not, even a few thousand people don't represent a threat. To do this to a country like the United States, you would need 400,000 to 500,000 people outside of the Capitol. And of course you would need arms, but it would have to be supported by a vast apparatus of a movement. That's not what's happening here. So the US ruling class knows that these people represent no threat. They're going to use them as a stated threat. And then they're going to turn that as a threat ever more on us. And to me, it's just an indication that the Biden presidency is going to be a presidency of brutality, of martial law, of surveillance, of control, and a one that unfortunately is going to garner a lot of support because they're using tricks like this to basically, dress themselves in the flag and in freedom and democracy. And they use that very same thing to destroy other countries and bomb them into oblivion. And now they're going to use that same mantle to essentially, dismantle any opposition that they're going to face here in this country. So this is very chilling to me, but not because people are storming in, but because how the people inside the Congress are going to use this to go after all of us.
Yeah, I mean, we've had large protests before. I'm not sure why you would say that this is only an impetus or more so because of recent. I agree that this is, but I'm wondering what gives this more the push for that greater censorship or that greater restriction.
I mean, I would say that because they got into the White House, they got into the Capitol and they allowed them to kind of do all their business there. And now they're going to make a big deal of it. They're going to talk about dangerous radicals, mostly on the right. And they're going to use the attack on the dangerous radicals on the right, who themselves weren't that dangerous. Again, the most dangerous people to be found in all of this are the people inside the Capitol, are the people inside the White House, the Dick Cheneys of the world, I don't even know the current defense director, they've had so many, but Mad Dog Mattis, right? These are the most dangerous people in the world, and they've been allowed to act like they're civil, but they're not. They're dangerous hoodlums who are destroying countries abroad and who are immiserating people in this country. And so it's those criminals inside who must be stopped. Those people on the outside coming in, they were never going to stop them. They represent absolutely no threat to those on the inside. And those on the inside know it. They know it. And they're going to use the stated threat of them. It's kind of like the Reichstag fire in Germany,
They're going to use the stated threat of this group on the outside, this dangerous group, and these hoodlums and these armed vigilantes, and we have to take your guns away. We have to do all these other restrictions. This is what I see coming.
And now we have people on the left, you know, defending a democracy that doesn't exist, you know, again, just falling in line. You know, we already know how people are like turning a blind eye to Kamala and Biden because of their past. And now, you know, they expect them to deliver some security of democracy, you know, and again, their toolkit, you know, their life's work has been repression of people, you know, and they have a justification to begin the year, you know, to clamp down on hooligans, insurrectionists, let me see what other words to use, coup attempters, you know, rioters, people that are attempting to, you know, destroy the stability of this nation. And so they've already set up, you know, people with that in mind, that they're going to have justification to impose, you know, they have COVID already to kind of impose their will on people and like send us home whenever they want. And they've actually said it themselves, you know, Biden and Kamala, they want to impose like a mandate on masks everywhere in the country. And, you know, there will be a reaction. And the reaction that I think is going to maybe hopefully happen is as a consequence of the economic, you know, squeeze that they're doing to a section of the country, not the whole country, because there are sections of the economy that are doing pretty well, actually. But the desperation, you know, that people are going to feel, you know, when we have to protest fucking the evictions, you know, the masses of evictions on hold right now, you know, when people, the bread lines keep getting larger, you know, for a sector of the economy again. And again, this is going to be their justification, because people are just looters, rioters, insurrectionists, you know, destabilizing forces. And so now they have more tools, you know, they have a nationalist agenda, you know, to unite and make, bring America together again. And they have COVID, you know, as another scare tactic, and to justify their imposition. So I am actually very scared. I'm more scared of these guys, the liberal, you know, establishment, than any white person protesting and insulting racial slurs, because these people are sneaky. These people are, you know, and it's been proven. It's not even like, it's not even a huge assumption, you know, like, what do you people? We don't call fascism when we persecuted 3 million people. We built an apparatus to persecute, criminalize, and deport 3 million people in 8 years under Obama. We don't call that fascism because he wasn't white, you know. And like again, I think the left is one-dimensional when it thinks about fascism. You know, we just think it's like this binary, you know, like white people, Nazis, this and that. But there are more elements, you know, of social control, social impositions that, you know, encompass fascism that we're not looking at, you know. Where are the Antifa when it comes to, you know, surveillance and, you know, all these impositions in our houses, you know? So everyone's buying, like, on the left. It's incredible. And so I'm actually more afraid of the left right now than the right wing. And people should be more afraid of them and watch it with scrutiny because... Yeah, I mean, I think they're the fastest vehicle to that world that Alison McDowell is describing, you know, the fastest vehicle to techno-fascism. And so, and we know who's going to pay the first, you know, who's going to get a taste of it first. It's always the marginalized community. So if you care about marginalized communities, you should be watchful for this.
I would just separate the anti-fascist. I think the Antifa could be, I think that they are there. They simply go after people who, like in Charlottesville, you have people going after people's race. But I think that it would be nice to see Antifa more organized to be able to stand against surveillance, and also they may just be in a more anti-capitalist for a more anti-capitalist cause. But what I would like to say is that I am scared of the right or the left that falls into the trap of considering Republicans and Democrats as their saviors, because I think that they could turn on folks like us. And that means a Trump supporter can turn on you because they think that Trump is their savior, or that means a Democrat who trusts Joe Biden because they think that we are now fringy. And so I do think that those people can turn on us if they're tricked, if they are blindsided, if they are, you know, put there's a spell on them by the current form of government we have.
I mean, I'm personally, I get it. You know, there are cases, right? There are individual situations, and I think by and large the media, magnifies those exceptional. That's what they do with COVID. That's what they do with these, you know, isolated cases, or that happen. You know, that's their stick. But I'm not afraid of those individual cases. You know, if I live life that way, then everything's scary. You know, I'm more scared of the structure just like coming over everyone. I'm not even scared for myself individually. It's for all of us. You know, and I think that's the problem. Maybe like we're not able to conceptualize, you know, think abstractly. Like, I'm afraid of that whole, you know, the ruling class who's going to laugh to the bank as they do all this stuff, you know, and they're proving that they're vicious, you know, we are so afraid of fascism, you know, like coming down the road because people expect it probably in packaged in a Nazi way, you know, but that's what I would warn against, you know, to you know, things adapt and, you know, modify. And I think fascism is coming from the left, actually, in the way that it has impositions on your life, you know, and limits you and limits dissent and, you know, in a brutal way. Maybe they won't kill you physically, but they will fucking restrict your life, you know, virtually and like with all these technologies that are coming in. And I think that's where we lack imagination. Like, again, we only see this one person, you know, chanting racial slurs. But listen, I'm not going to let that motherfucker, like, enslave me. You know, like, I'm not. But you know what? Who's going to enslave us? All these people together. You know, the state, the capitalists, all together. They're in it together.
Yeah. I just wouldn't describe Amazon or the U.S. state as left. I wouldn't. I would describe that as the capitalist class and the establishment section. I do understand how they're going to use liberalism to push fascism. I agree with that. The left, if it has any meaning, does seem to me represent at least people who think of themselves as independent and fighting for a different kind of society that is more equal and more just. And that is, you know, run by regular people. That now, I do agree that most of those people who have been part of that project are now trapped under the establishment and are caught in that trap because they're saying fighting off the Trump coup. But I would make a distinction. Like, I just can't. It's impossible for me to talk about the Democratic Party as the left. I do understand that the left has joined into the Democratic Party, but the Democratic Party is like the sledgehammer of the capitalist class. It's not even and they've got two sledgehammers, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. And that's one of their sledgehammers they can use to wield power against workers. So the thing I would also say is until today, like think about what's been happening over this last week, the stimulus package, Nancy Pelosi exposed and the Democratic Party exposed as completely craven and given into moneyed interests. The Republicans even exposed on that. Trump doing his little game, I'm going to hold out for 2000 and didn't. And now look, is that what's going to be talked about? You think that story is going to stay in the minds there? No. It's going to be about Nancy Pelosi saved democracy. I mean, there's going to be cynicism around it, but by and large, it's going to, I mean, already the CFT, the California Federation of Teachers, just sent something out to us as teachers. How do we defend our democracy? We defend our democracy by going on strike and storming the Capitol and taking those fools out ourselves. That's the only way we defend democracy, is dismantling capitalist democracy. And it ends at the Capitol with us taking those people out of there in the same way. And these demonstrators had no intention of doing that either. They weren't looking to take people out. They were just doing like the left has done this. We've done this in Sacramento. We go there at Occupy, right? We stay there until our demands are met. That's really the closest thing you could say to what they were, if you were saying they were doing anything there. And their actions, though, are going to be definitely used to go after anybody who's outside the fringe, whether they be left or right. And so I think the hand of the state has been severely strengthened today, and they've been given the support of a section of the working class that the state and the capitalists plan on smashing. But now they're going to use events like this to say, nope, come back on our side as we smash you. And it's again, we might talk about predictions. This is not a good way to start the year. And I don't mean, oh, they're storming the Capitol. I mean, we're not storming the Capitol. And those people who were storming the Capitol weren't successful. If they had been successful, I'd be in a better mood.
Yeah, I think I'll hold off from my support for them. I'll consider working with the thousands and thousands and even millions of people that have voted for Trump, but I'm not for these folks, these folks here. So I'll hold off my support for them.
Why not? Why are you not for it?
They're not the kind of because mostly they are a fascist mob. They're mostly I was looking a lot of what, because I saw this other news, not KPFA, and they looked up a lot of the groups that were organizing this event, and a lot of them are very they have a lot of racist means, you know. They have a lot of intentions to basically ethnic cleanse people of color, and I'm not saying the entire mob. I'm just saying that some of these groups that did organize this, and I'm, you know, if some of the people that were in it may be misguided or misled, I'm willing to work with someone who is a racist and work towards a cause that is for the working class, that we can both see that we are the same people being screwed over by the capitalist class. But there are forces behind that are organized, that are institutionally organized, and not like an institution like in the system, but that are extreme right-wing organizations that know what they're doing. And they're stirring up people to go to the Capitol. So I'm not for them, as well as I'm not for the capitalist class in that Capitol building. So that's why I said for this specific mob that have organized forces behind them, I would hold off my support for them.
What do you think about their claims about, you know, election fraud?
I think it's one-sided. Voters were purged off of the voter roll in Georgia, mm-hmm. You know, and no one's talking about that. And there were mostly African-American voters. So if they really were interested in voter fraud or voter suppression, they should look at them. And I think that it's now the Republican Party or Trump supporters want to talk about voter suppression, voter fraud, but there's a greater fraud happening. And it's been happening in Georgia for a very long time, and mostly against liberal voters. Yeah.
I mean, I would personally, you know, be like, yeah, I don't agree with, you know, some of the reasons. I do think that there is voter fraud. You know, it's widespread. It's on the left and the right. I think elections are a sham. And I think that's where, like, I don't know, Lipson. I don't even know if there is a left. At this moment, I'm, like, wondering, like, is there even a left? Because, like, Kamala and Biden, they're fucking right-wingers in blue. You know, and that's the perfect color for them. And I, like, a lot of the people that I know, my circles, social media, whatever, they're supposed to be more radical leftists. They're falling for this. And, you know, and so, what, again, this kind of makes me wonder about the left and how atrophied it is, how weak, how much of a patches we are, because there is being massive fraud here. You know, like Bernie Sanders' elections were stolen in front of everyone. In front of everyone. You know, and nothing happened. You know, he stayed quiet, obviously, because he's in it. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez stayed quiet because she's in it too. You know, they showed their colors right now when they voted for Nancy Pelosi, you know, unanimously following the party lines, even though they came into, you know, claiming they're going to hold their vote, you know, to force something, but they didn't. And, you know, and again, we're not talking about that story, how much frauds they, you know, they are. You know, like, if you maybe want to get a taste of it, like, check out the, you know, the hashtag the fraud squad, you know, and people are angry. There's a lot of people that are angry at the Fab Five or whatever, because they said they're doing one thing and they didn't do it. You know, it's not the first time. But again, the storyline is not going to be that, you know, and the left is, again, just falling in line. And so I don't know. Like, that's why I'm like, yeah, I think you're right, Lipson, the right. You know, there has to be some distinction. But to me, it's like I question whether there is a left right now.
Yeah, and let me make clear. So my reason that I think all humanity would benefit if those people who are right now on the outside would be successful in clearing out the inside of the Capitol is not because there aren't connections of some of those people to extreme views or whatever, and some institutions there who might see themselves either as supremacist or what. But like I said, let's talk about the institutional connections on the inside of that Capitol. Silicon Valley, Wall Street, multinational corporations of every stripe, Department of Defense, 1,000 military bases across the globe, the largest nuclear arsenal in the globe, and they've used it twice in one country, and they've already irradiated Iraq and Afghanistan. CIA, NSC, those people in the Congress are institutionally connected to those forces, and those are the forces that are killing the world. So you clear those people out, now you haven't solved the problem, but you've made progress. Now this band outside, it's a theater, so it's hard to talk about it in any serious way. This is a show that's going to be used to strengthen the hand of the state. I get it, but I would say, Eduardo, that the most dangerous people in the globe have already proven themselves, and it's not like they might be most dangerous. They have a track record of danger and of murder and of misery and of theft. And those are the people inside that Congress. They dress nice. Some of them look of color. Some are women. But that's them. That's the institution that is the one killing everyone, except the wealthy.
And I haven't denied that. Right?
No. That's what I mean, though, is the people who are connected to the most dangerous institutions are inside that Capitol right there. Mm-hmm. And so I'm saying, you clear those people out, you still haven't solved the problem. But that we've made some headway now. We've actually made it difficult now for the state to assemble. I'm just saying, I'm doing a thought experiment, because this group of ragtag Trump supporters they were never a threat. Look, there was an actual threat when Vietnam was going on, and it was a bombing run on Cambodia, and LBJ was actually worried that the demonstrators were going to come over the barriers and take them out. Okay, there was hundreds of thousands of people there. It was very much more in play. That's not what's going on here. I would like it to be going on here. I would like there to be 400,000 people outside of Washington, D.C. And then, and of course, general strikes in all the cities that are shutting everything down. And it's culminating in us removing mayors out of their offices while we simultaneously remove a president and come and take them all out of their offices and say, you're done. We'd like to do it peacefully. If we have to do it, we'll do it violently. That's what's going to have to happen. And honestly, these little ragtag are kind of giving you a little mini dress rehearsal of what's going to have to happen. But it's a setup. These people have been set up to succeed. They opened gates to let them in. They knew they were coming. All right. They cleared out the police so they could do it. It wasn't about white police helping white people, because there were people getting their heads cracked. This is a political operation to allow Biden and Kamala Harris to come in and really crack heads afterwards. And we're gonna thank them for it when they censor us, when they jail us, when they surveil us. And we're gonna say, thank you. Can you do some more to keep the far right from getting us? And that's the trick they're gonna play on us. And the reality is, the most dangerous far right forces are the ones who are gonna be imposing this. And they're gonna be doing it under Biden. That's why Dick Cheney is supporting them. Right? Dick Cheney, dude. So these are the people, and these people have an actual track record of blood on their hands. And they're the ones who are going to call the shots. So it would be a good thing if some of those people got cleared out. Yeah. And I kind of don't care what section of the working class does it. It's not a socialist revolution.
Well, but it's actually a section of the working class. There are forces that they know what they're doing. They're not necessarily just, they know these, they're using a section of the working class for their own means, yes, and their gains.
I think that's actually what's taking place. But I'm just saying, if you asked me to say, who, picking sides here, I'm picking the sides of the people who are on the outside, not the inside.
Well, I would pick folks on the outside, but these aren't it for me.
Okay. I just want to be clear.
Yeah, I get that. There was something Kenny said, though, I wanted to respond to, which is, I agree that I don't see the Democrats as the left. I see them as, yeah, I don't. But the people who do, here's where the confusing part is that there are definitely lots of people on our side of the left that do support Democrats. And that's a lot of people. That's a lot. And I think that this is the reason why I associate myself in Democrat circles, because I think that our left is misguided in supporting the folks on the as of the Democrats who are in the disguise. It's like the sheep, right? The wolf in the sheep skin. So yes, that's I think I agree with your assessment, both of your assessment, as far as what the Democrats are, they're not even part of the left. There are some struggles, though. I do feel as if the Democrats, as I've said before, and I'm not going to deny that I have said this before, that I do think that sometimes the Democrats have some causes that I do not see the Republicans taking on, that I have said, if I have to take on some position to be able to support a candidate or that even maybe Democrat, I will, if it's in support of a certain cause. But I don't want to get too into that, because this is not the episode for that. But I think both of you know what I mean by that, as I've stated it before.
I do wonder why you both think about the Senate 50-50 split, and then Kamala, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing, but what do you see from that, the vice president being the tiebreaker?
I think we have to move on some, it's not going to be to my liking, but certainly some progress on conserving some important parts of the environment, and hopefully as well is, that's my primary, as I do consider myself to be an environmentalist. So I think that there's constant stonewalling being done from the Republicans on putting any measure of any sort of regulations on the contamination of our environment. So I think for me, that's going to be one, is regulating businesses on how they should not be or minimizing their impact on the environment. Yeah, that's the 50-50 vote. I think that might be making a significant matter from my part.
I would say that this is another indication of the consolidation of the establishment behind the Democratic Party and the capitalist class consolidating itself and its plan to destroy the environment, to essentially immiserate workers even more, to compete with China at all costs, and to create the digital hell that we're going to live in, that will actually, one, help them rule us better, help them exploit us better, and help them extract profits so they can compete with China and compete internationally. That tells me that they are in a very good position to put that plan forward, because they now have a Democratic Senate. They now have an establishment Senate. I think people have heard in the past, like, it's kind of like a left hangover to think that Democrats are like some sort of protector from this. That, look, at this point now, the Democrats are Dick Cheney. They're John Bolton. And, I mean, they were before, but it's even more obvious that, to me, that their victory in Georgia for those two Senate seats that give them a majority in the Senate, it basically means they're going to get an open highway. They're setting up an open highway for a Green New Deal that will destroy the environment, a Green New Deal that will make gig workers out of all of us. That's what's going to happen. And that's their plan. The Green New Deal is not to protect the environment. That's the sell job. The Green New Deal is to make it a commodity and put it in the finance area so you can make profits off of it. That's it. I mean, that's only a piece of it. The other piece of it, I do think, is connected to smart cities, a digital surveilled economy, and workers separated and controlled by AI. And if you don't have a job, you are being nudged around with the UBI to be able to basically said, behave or you're off the government dole. And that's the world that I do believe that world is being constructed for us now. And the Democrats are the lead practitioners of creating it. And of course, the fourth industrial revolution is being sold as more equitable, more sustainable, all those things that it's the opposite of. It's a acceleration. Well, most people who look at the fourth industrial think of it's about the New World Order, a massive global oligarchy. That's not how I see it. It is an acceleration towards even fiercer global competition between the national capitals and mostly the US and China, which must end in war.
So I think this is a perfect segue for going into predictions and hopes. Or predictions, maybe not so much hopes. Because what you're talking about, Andy, when you're saying that, you see, I do think the 50-50 vote on some causes like the environment that I mentioned, one of the causes I think could serve for.
I got it.
Or I also think that, as well as it could serve to interfere with some of these trigger laws that are being legislated across the USA. And I forget how many states now, where as soon as any justice decides that Roe versus Wade is going to be overturned, we could potentially appoint a new Supreme Court justice judge. And then that could potentially save Roe versus Wade. And it's sad to think this way. Again, I'm not here to try to uphold the current system, but as I have said many times, I do think that there are people's lives, such as women's lives, that are at stake here, where is it? I saw it somewhere in as many states where people are struggling to get even just their basic healthcare. Women are the basic healthcare needs for the abortion. And so a 50-50 tie could potentially appoint a judge where, until this revolution comes, and I hope it comes, there will be a stalling of people's lives being ruined by the overturning of Roe versus Wade, which I think is a very high likely thing that might happen in 2021. There's my prediction, by the way.
Yeah, I guess my prediction kind of goes off the whole 50-50 split. I think we're going to see a lot of things that look benevolent. They're sold as benevolent, but are really not. You know, sort of like DACA, for example. You know, that it was used to derail a whole movement, if you know, that had a decent size. And actually affect fascism against immigrants. I think they are going to make moves. And this is something Allison kind of brought up. They might make moves in like healthcare. I don't know if this year or next, on the environment. You know, they're going to, you know, bring market solutions to, you know, to kind of appease people, I guess. But at what cost? You know, that's always going to be my question. At what cost? I don't really think they have the best interest of people in mind. Their lords, the people in power, the people who actually decide, you know, is the capitalist ruling class. And so, yeah, my prediction is that we're going to buy the sleight of hand, and but then we're going to see the repercussions later, you know, that after they've been implemented, sort of like the Patriot Act and, you know, all those things that came up after 9/11, as a result of, you know, this nationalist fervor to save democracy and bullshit, and emotionally, you know. So that's my prediction, that there will be a lot of things that look like progress, but they're not progress.
Well, I'm in agreement with both of you, and I think we're touching on that same issue, where I do think that there will be a breakthrough in AI technology that, well, we already have lots of breakthroughs, but I think of more advanced AI. I'm even afraid to buy a heater that's smart. You know, I mean, anything can be embedded in anything these days. So there are lots of things that we are not being sold to. I think the internet was first done for the military first before it was given to the public. So I imagine there's a lot of technological advances we don't know of yet that they are privy to, because it's first always used. The technology is always, I think, I was reading somewhere in history where tech advances because of the military more than anything. It's not because of consumer needs. It only reaches that point after it's been spilled over after the military. So most of technology is only to advance however efficient a country can be in protecting itself, or in the name of protecting itself, but rather more so military. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, so I do think there will be an greater advancement in biotech, as we're now seeing how 1 year can do, what 1 year can do with vaccines. And we've done an episode here with CRISPR. So going back for me to the environment, I just see nature being messed with. I see GMOs, genetically modified foods, being also advanced and meddled with. And yes, global carbon emissions will increase. That's something I continue to predict will happen. Yeah, I'll stop there and have everyone, anyone else.
Jeff Bezos is going to reach $300 billion in wealth.
For me this year, I think a major theme is going to be consolidation and a continuation of censorship and of control of what gets out there, and making it harder for alternative voices to squeak in the margins. I do think they're going to now be an extension of a more surveilled population in this country. I think we're going to start to really feel its invasion much more so throughout the course of this year. And those, to me, I feel like are going to be the prominent themes of feeling like we live in a much more controlled environment, where we need to watch our steps, watch what we say, kind of watch what we do. And we have to do some things we don't want to do. Like, we have to take a vaccine in order to get your job.
Right.
So I do think the population is being prepared for to be, you know, more watched, more restricted in what it says, and more told what it has to do, even if it doesn't want to do it. And I think that's going to be, for me, that I feel like it's going to be the major theme I expect this year. Now, I think it might be worth talking about our hopes.
Well, I have one more prediction before we go there.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. And then let's do the hopes part.
Yeah, and maybe the hopes will lead into our vision.
Yeah.
I do predict that not one of the family of Trump will be indicted at all. Anyhow, that was my last prediction.
And hopes. I mean, I don't know. I don't know about Trump. I don't know if he still stay around and like be useful, you know, for whatever reason, you know, him and his cronies and stuff. But we'll see. I mean, yeah. But I guess hopes. I don't know if I have. Political hopes, personal hopes.
Let me put it concretely. So I'm very pessimistic about the prospects for struggle in this country right now, like in the United States. It's very hard for me to see, particularly as a teacher. In France, actually, teachers played a role in fighting back Macron's attempt to say that you couldn't videotape police, but they were back at school. They were back there. They were able to organize from that position. Wasn't teachers did it, but they were able to play a role, and unionized workers were able to play a role in fighting the French state. I think we're not in that position. Well, our situation is much more dire here in the United States. We have a much more brutal ruling class and a working class that is much more decimated, it feels to me. And now as a teacher, I'm really not expecting to see any struggle from my side of my section of the class. So for me, I'm starting to meet with some teachers who want to reopen schools, and we're going to start meeting in person just to get through the idea that you can't meet in person. And we're going to just be a small group of people, and we're going to talk about what we're going to talk about. I don't think we're going to make an impact on the debate. I think public schools are going to continue, or unionized schools are going to continue to get eroded, and choice is going to be used to essentially make it so that the capitalist class is able to get around a one organized section of the working class where we've had a bit of ability to defend ourselves. And then they're going to use that like a hammer blow on our pensions and on our wages. I think I want to continue to meet with those teachers. I'm going to continue to do what's left with y'all. And then Brian and I are going to really try to read more deeply in some Marxism, particularly the economics part. And I'd like to be able to get an understanding of the way that Allison talks about the fourth industrial revolution and to understand that in more Marxist terms. And so that's kind of a goal I have, is to do that kind of studying so that maybe in a year I'll have more to say on that in terms that reflect my politics. So other than, I think this is going to be an isolated year, but I hope to do some education for myself and with a few people around me, and continue to work with AJ as well, and see if anything comes out of that. See if anything out of the course of this year. I've certainly put out that how I feel about coronavirus, how I feel about the closing down of schools and the fourth industrial revolution. I'll see if anybody hears this message and says, "Hey, I want to work with you." That hasn't been the case around me here in San Francisco or in Oakland, but maybe that'll happen. And so I'm not necessarily thinking that's going to happen. So I'm really kind of setting myself to work with the people I know and the people who I'm currently working with, and try to expand that and build those connections.
I guess my hope is that people realize that getting together is an act of rebellion more than ever. I think that plays both politically and personally. Like, I want to, you know, find ways to exist within this world that's taking shape. Because I know, like, you know, it's not going to turn the way I want it to be, at least not for now. I don't see, I'm also a little bit of a pessimist. You know, like I said earlier, I don't know if there's a left, you know, at least a significant one. Everyone's kind of buying the right wing shit. And, you know, and like, you know, I remember one of the things that sticks around with me is that, you know, like reformism opens the door to fascism. And, you know, I'm kind of seeing that playing out. So, yeah, I'm just trying to, I guess I hope that I can find more people that are willing to, like I've said before, getting punched, you know, whether it's been, you know, physically, probably not, but like, you know, by people around you isolating you and like disregarding your opinions. So people that are willing to be different, people that are willing to challenge things and not take things at face value, even if we disagree. But people that are courageous in that way to stand out. And so, yeah, I mean, I've been trying to put together a Communist Manifesto study group, and it's finally materializing. And, you know, I'm not chasing people. People are coming to me for us to organize and, like, figure out, you know, and, like, within the community of organizers that I know, my circle. And so, yeah, my hope is that I don't lose conviction, I guess, in a way, because at the times I do struggle with, like, why the fuck am I even doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, like, people don't give a shit, you know, and, like, I get condescending comments often, you know, like, I still, when I engage with some liberal people, so I'm learning to how to navigate this, so, but at times, too, you know, I do struggle personally, like, isolation, political isolation is real, and it sucks, and, you know, and so I just hope I keep my spirits up, you know, because, I mean, I wouldn't do this if I wasn't hopeful, you know, if I didn't expect better. I think, you know, that's part of my slow burning anger, that I expect better. You know, I think there is better. And so I hope I don't lose that, you know, like I stay somewhat, you know, I keep some revolutionary spirit within me. But I am concerned with the long-term consequences of isolation. You know, it breaks people. And I think that's the point, you know, to kind of make you fall in line, you know? And so, yeah, but I have a good group of people, so I'm going to lean on them, you know, people that are not necessarily as politically mindful as I am, but they're supportive. So I'm going to lean on them and continue to go on hikes, you know, as long as I don't take them away.
I my hope for this year is just to work with both of you in a meaningful way. And I, you know, it's interesting. I, you know, you're doing this with Brian, and Kenny has joined that, a study group. I'm not sure if I have, I'm right now in 3 book clubs. So it's in Spanish, English, and sign language. Mm. And I was going to sign up to a French one, but I'm really overbooked, so I don't know if I want to do that. So it sounds great what you're doing, Andy, and it sounds great what you're doing. I really want to say, I'll jump in on that, so I have to think through. If I wasn't doing a learning pod, maybe. So that is something I would love to do. I would really like to participate and to study more. Marxist theory that's applicable to our times, and also to organize with both of you in a more meaningful way outside of this. I think these discussions are important because they obviously are gaining traction. People are signing up to them. Something's working, you know, even if we're slow and the algorithms are against us, something's working. So I know that this is a conversation that has to continue. So I do see this as some form of organizing. It's like those, I see it, I've seen it, you've talked about it, the ISO, Andy, where you've given those speeches or those talks, those you have to get up on a platform. I've seen other socialist groups do that, the PSL. I've also seen another socialist group do that. I forget what they were called, but they closed down recently. They were in my neighborhood. And they do prepare these talks once a week. And I see that sort of what we're doing here on What's Left. So I think it's important that we have these conversations. My hope for what's left is that I hope that we are able to contact more authors, people who are not just writers, but also labor activists that write about this stuff, such as the last time we had was a socialist, Bruce, help me his last name, Gutzenberg. Neuberger.
Yeah.
And I was telling Andy Kenny that Cal Winslow is a labor activist, and he wrote a book on the general strike of 1919, and I think it would be perfect to have him on, and more people like that, as well as maybe some of the people we've criticized in the past, maybe such as the anarchist that I really love that co-signed with this one of the voting for Joe Biden.
Wait, which one?
I forget his name now. It escapes my mind. He wrote the Wobblies and Zapatistas book.
Okay.
But he lives in the Bay Area, and I would really love for him to come on here. And I'm sure he'd be willing to take some of the criticism, you know. And I hope to also reach a Spanish language channel. Spanish is the third most spoken language in the world. And we have two Spanish speakers here. I don't see why we are not going in that direction to reach a larger audience. I think the USA is always an English language. Countries happen to always lean on these systems. But if you look at Latin America, we've always had revolutions. And even Spain, we've always had revolutions. And we've always had uprisings. And there's something to be done there.
And I'm
working class is a lost cause anyway.
I'm willing to do it as long as I'm allowed to speak in my non-Mexican Spanish.
You can speak whatever language. I'm sure they're going to hear you out more than they're going to hear me out.
I think it'd be neat.
No, yeah, I think so, Kenny. I think we have to do something like that. We've just discussed this before, Andy, where I would like to take us there. I really would like to take us there. And as much as all the stupid crap I say about the elite of Spanish, I really do think that we need to reach a larger working class. And they are there. I mean, they could be radicalized. We have them there, and they're waiting for something. They're not, and they're the least trusting of politicians. There was a recent interview, so I'm digressing, this is the last bit, but there was an interview of children, that Mexican children, that were asked, what do you think of a politician? And they just clearly said, oh, son ratas, they're rats, they steal, fraudulent. I wouldn't want to be a politician. You know, it's just, that's the culture. People don't trust politicians.
Yeah.
I'll leave it there. That does it for this week's episode. What's Left is a weekly political podcast / channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes, wherever you found this episode, or on our blog at what-s-left.webnode.com. You can find past episodes to this podcast / channel there and connect with us. I remind folks, if you fancy anything you've heard here, please share your favorite episode, rate, review, turn on your notifications, and subscribe to any of our 6 platforms on Spotify, iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, or YouTube. If you would like to give us feedback about something you've heard or suggest something for us to cover, contact us through our blog. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-hosts Kenny Cepeda and Andy Lipson. See you next time.
Happy New Year.
Feliz Día de Reyes. I went to go get stuff for them because today is Day of the Kings, Andy.
So, Day of the Kings? Oh, yeah, it definitely is. Yeah. Who's the Kings?
Day of the King, the three wise kings that went to visit Jesus.
Wait, wasn't that like, that wasn't the 25th? That was...
No, that was the three wise kings were granted. So they did visit supposedly on the 24th and on the 25th, yes. But because the three wise kings gave... Kenny, if you know it differently, it's okay. Just tell me. The three wise kings gave gifts to Jesus. Jesus, the baby, gave powers and immortalized the three wise kings. So they come on the fifth, at least in Spain and in Mexico, you partes la rosca. You there's this big bread, and they cut the bread, and then you have a little gift in a little like
baby Jesus.
Baby Jesus. And then that 6 midnight, you get gifts from the three wise kings.
Then you're supposed to throw a party next week?
That, yeah, but does that happen in Guatemala too? Because I know that's Mexican. Yeah? No? Oh.
That is. You call it this. Yeah.
No, we did not colonize.
The Mexican Empire was a thing for 2 years.
No, Kenny, don't put it on us. Brown people did not colonize, only white people.
Oh, really? That seems to be the assumption here. You know,
like, it really is.
The Mayan Empire is.
Brown people cannot be racist. They cannot colonize. They cannot. When we are racist, we are forgiven for that.
So I don't understand what were they doing then? Like they went and visited the lamb and the stables back over the
barnyard. And then after that, they are on a different trip.
They're on a different trip.
They visit children in everyone's homes.
Oh,
instead of Father Christmas, you get the three wise kings in Latin America.
Oh, I get it. Okay, so they're like they're like Santa Claus, but a posse.
Yes, and they're ethnic as well.
Well, I don't
one
like that.
One is Melchor. Melchor is from Europe, I think. Like, Gaspar is from Asia. And Baltasar is from Africa.
If they don't have that outfit on, I don't trust them.
And the one I grew up with, the story is that Melchor was on the horse, Gaspar was on the elephant, and Baltasar was on the camello, the camel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They had a divine mandate to rule. So, yeah.
They did. They had a... But for the kids, we modified it a bit. My one of the girls in my learning part, there's only one. She said, what about me? And I said, and there's a queen too, by the way. I told her. There's a wise queen, and she ruled all of them.
You tell her, you tell her she was reading off the books.
I should have. I also told them, because we don't really celebrate Father Christmas or Papa Noel or Santa Claus much, so we celebrate La Hada del Solsticio, which is the fairy solstice.